Welcome back to Following Noah Dawn, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 207, and we are entering the Lost Metal. With this book, gentlemen, you are officially in current era Brandon Sanderson books. How do you feel, Paul?
It feels great. I'm excited to get started. I'm excited to see this ramp up. This was like all the hype at the previous Dragon Still we went to because it was being released. And ever since then, I've wondered, you know, what's all the hype about? So I'm excited to really dive into it and figure that out.
Elliot?
I was going to say the same thing. This is the first book that I have recent memories of the release of. It felt like we were really far away from reading it at the time it was releasing, but we were there at Dragonsteel when everybody was talking about this. So this was the first like hype book that I got to be involved in. So to be able to actually pick it up and start reading it, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And by a long time, I say 2 years.
Sounds good. We have several different things to talk about. We'll be going through the prologue through chapter 10. So let's roll intro and get a brief summary from Elliot. All right, Elliot, I lied last week when I said we were going to chapter 5. We are going all the way through chapter 10. What happens?
All the way through 10, prologue through 10 of The Lost Metal. The prologue hits you pretty hard right off the bat. We get a flashback with Wayne all the way back to his childhood and his mother telling him a story about Allomancer Jack and then dying the next day, which was a little sad and surprising. But then chapter 1 picks it up with a, Trevor, you warned us about this, 6-year time skip. And despite a 6-year time skip, I feel like not a ton has happened. It feels like we're kind of picking things up in a similar place that we left them off with. Although Wax is retired, supposedly, he's now a senator. He's got 2 kids with Steris, which I think is adorable. Marcy and Wayne are off doing constable type stuff. They're wading through sewage in the sewer to track down a bunch of the Set. They find them and they take them down. They take down that little cell of the Set, and Marcy takes out the cycle, which I guess is almost like a rank in the Set. But he's doing some hemallergic stuff, so now we've got some things to trace down of what's going on. He says some really ominous things about Trell. And then, let's see, Wax kind of gets sucked back into things a little bit. They're talking about what they want to do. Wax flies around the city with his son Max strapped to his back, which is pretty entertaining. And yeah, they do a little bit of investigating into Trellium, this new metal that they've got that is reacting differently than a lot of the other metals that they have. And yeah, that kind of gets it all the way through chapter 10 with, I guess, the notable event of the Malwish Consortium has just been formed, and they've sent a new, somewhat cranky ambassador to Elendil.
Sounds good. We get our first young, like, married parents as main characters in this book, which I've mentioned on the podcast before. That's what I really want Elantris 2 to be. I would love Serini and Raoden to be, like, right about where Wax and Steris are right about now, you know, where you have some younger kids that you're, you know, you're doing your best to raise as the world falls apart. Paul, I believe we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but your wife has read The Lost Metal, and you said that her reaction to the end of The Lost Metal was pretty impactful. So based on that, what are you anticipating here?
So I'm certainly anticipating that someone is going to die, given her reaction, where she came in and told me that she thought the book was fantastic. She loved this era. It's her like favorite series within the Cosmere. Favorite standalone book is Trest, but favorite series is this. But given her reaction, I'm assuming somebody dies or maybe multiple people die. And I don't know. Maybe it's a pretty ending. Maybe it's a messy ending. I'm not sure. But something definitely impactful. I'm assuming somebody dies. I feel like we often assume that when we're near the end of the stories. But I'm not certain. I do have to say, though, Trevor, I don't really have a bone to pick with you, but mildly, because it's really cool. I love that we get to see Steris and Wax as parents here, but you totally led us to believe, I feel like, that this was not going to be the case. I feel like you've alluded to the one thing that Cosmere needs is this young parent, representation. we need to see this perspective. It'd be really neat. I'd really like to see that. You know, and you're like, maybe Elantris 2, maybe Stormlight Era 2, or I don't know, something in the future. And so I feel mildly misled.
He also gently pushed us in the love triangle direction, if you remember that in early here. He was keying in on so what do you guys think about Marisi and Wax and what's going on there? You were playing a little defense on the spoilers there.
I think I did it fairly well, since you didn't anticipate either one.
And I think Brandon backed him up big on that one, because it felt very apparent at the start of the series that Marisi was the character that you could kind of fit with Wax. Steris and Wax just do not fit at all at the start, and it's obvious. So I give him a little slack on that. But yes, the love triangle didn't really turn out to be anything much. But I will say, I really enjoyed this prologue. The Wax prologue from the previous book and this prologue, I've really enjoyed. This one, I guess, felt less narratively impactful to me, but it was really cool to see Wayne with his mom, Wayne being absolutely Wayne, even more childish as a child, you know. It was really funny. I thought it was really charming. And once again, Michael Kramer does a fantastic job of portraying this in audiobook. I just had such a good, clear picture of these two talking and going about with these stories and everything. It really kind of swept me away. I really enjoyed that chapter specifically.
But then the last three lines of the prologue, you're like, oh, I forgot he was an orphan. Dang it.
Yes.
You're right that most of it's, pretty laid back, pretty enjoyable. But right as you're turning the page to chapter one, you're like, now I'm depressed.
Dang it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I was thinking about how the prologue, sets you up for the whole book. It sets the tone. It kind of gives you the mindset to be in as you go. So now I'm like, oh dear, are we gonna set a foundation of the pain that Wayne's been through as a theme for our story? Is this gonna be Wayne's book? Are we gonna really dive into his background and his story and where he's going? I'm very curious about that now.
Kind of going off of that, have you guys noticed in Wayne point of view chapters so far, the Sanderson's really leaning into a self-deprecating point of view in Wayne's inner thought dialogue? Have you guys picked up on that? He's very much blaming himself for everything, telling himself that he's not worth anything, that type of thing. Did you guys pick up on that?
Definitely, yeah. It's one of those things where with characters like this, it's hard to tell when they're joking and when they're joking to get through the pain because it's real. And it's moments like those where Wayne is, like you said, really down on himself, really blaming himself for a lot of things, that it's like, is he just being goofy, or is it, no, he's trying to laugh because otherwise the pain would be too much, that kind of thing. That feels like where we're headed.
And with the prologue kind of framing that, would you say that sets up this book for a more heavier tone than, like, that's how I felt when I read the prologue. After I read the prologue for the first time, I thought what Paul's thinking, and I was like, okay, who's going to die? Because somebody's going to die in this book, and the prologue, you know, basically confirmed it for me. So that's what I got out of the prologue was, all right, we're into more heavy set, like, Cosmere implication story here. Who's going to die?
Yeah, if not die, then move on, if that makes sense. Similar to the end of Era 1 with Sazed becoming Harmony, I could see a similar thing happening, at least in some capacity, whatever, cognitive shadow, shard, whatever, you know, something happening with a character essentially saying farewell, whether they're not actually dying or something. It does feel like it has a more morose or, yeah, serious nature thus far. Of course, Wayne is like... I'm trying to think of the right phrase for this, but Wayne literally is like the embodiment of like the tension cutting joke, or like the avoiding my pain joke, you know? He's so not serious, so just over the top ridiculous. And we know that there's a lot of like pain behind that. And so it's like a weird mix of emotion. They're like, I feel genuinely sorry for him, but also he makes me laugh, you know? And so I feel like we get this weird dichotomy there. So yeah, definitely interesting.
With the heavier topics, maybe starting to come into some of this, it's actually starting to remind me of Shallan quite a bit. Think about, it's Words of Radiance. I'm not sure exactly where, but we lean heavily into, especially in like the Kaladin Shallan dynamic in Words of Radiance, where Kaladin starts to learn just how broken Shallan is, like incredibly to the foundation broken that Shallan is. But Kaladin gets inspired by the fact that Shallan can still bring light into other people's lives. Like specifically, that's his thought about her, is that, wow, she can bring light into my life despite being so incredibly broken. Like, is that where we're about to go with Wayne? Are we about to learn about maybe some much bigger things that are broken in his life, but yet he can still be like a positive influence in a good way? Or is it going to spiral into, actually, this is all super unhealthy and Wayne's not dealing with the difficulty in his life and he's papering over the cracks with the humor? Like, what direction are we going to go here?
All right, prediction time, gentlemen. As we're entertaining the idea of maybe people saying goodbye or maybe a death coming up, for the record, how safe is Sazed for the book?
Okay. I'm going to chime in and say I haven't thought of Sazed as being at risk.
Okay.
Thus far. I haven't really thought about that. So, my initial thoughts are that he is safe, naturally, if I haven't thought about that. But, you know, I fully expect this book to ramp up probably pretty quickly on a Cosmere level scale. You know, whatever Trell works out to be, or whoever Trell is, in front, if there's someone behind, no idea. Could be something bigger. And if that's the case, then typically that means some kind of shard on shard crime. So I think if that is the direction we're heading and we are really starting to ramp up, then Harmony certainly can and would be at risk. However, I don't really have anything to point to specifically of being like, yes, he is at risk and this is why. I haven't even thought that he would be at risk thus far.
Elliot?
Is Sazed at risk? In my mind, absolutely. Definitely. Definitely at risk. If I'm actually going to put a prediction on it, though, I think I'm going to predict that he's going to be okay. Kind of almost for just the fact that we already did that. We already did the overthrow a shard, take on the powers kind of thing.
Sure.
If I follow Paul's logic completely. If it's going to be something, it's going to be another cosmic power. I don't think we're going to see another girl from the streets takes on the power of a shard and then hands it to her friend who's a scholar guy. I don't think we're going to see that again.
Okay.
So I will throw out there, there's something I've been thinking about as we've been reading through this whole story, actually, that I'm remembering. I have had the thought in the back of my mind of if Sazed, as Harmony, were to try and pass the baton, like if something happens and he were to try and, I don't know, pass his power, pass the shard on to someone else, who would he pass it on to? Like, who would he choose to pass it on to? And so I feel like I just want to bring that up to y'all as a question, or maybe this is just for Elliot, I don't know. But I'm like, you know, it seems like he's always had Wax be his sword or his whatever, you know, so that makes sense. But I'm like, it's never who you expect it to be. It's never just the standard protagonist. So I'm not really sure. So I wanted to see what you thought.
Can you, I'm going to bunch with that for a second. Can you imagine the story set in a world where Wayne wields the galactic cosmic powers of that planet?
Preservation and ruin.
Or any shard.
Or, okay, no, hear me out. Hear me out here. Sazed moves on, goes into the beyond, whatever. Resplits the shard.
Mm-hmm.
Wax gets ruin, and Wayne gets preservation.
Oh, dear.
Imagine that sitcom.
That would be really cool. that would be wild. Okay, I will say, that's something that I haven't thought of, but if it's possible for Preservation and Ruin to join, and we've seen them separate, it's certainly possible for them to be separate again, right?
Sure.
And, you know, Wax and Wayne, I mean, that is like, you know, Preservation and Ruin, if you will. You know, it doesn't take too much to infer that, you know? That's pretty cool.
I've got it. No, and then they come together, combine their powers to make a moon so that everybody on Scadrial gets the joke of Wax and Wayne.
Yes, absolutely.
Now we're cooking.
You can even craft that into like a kid's fairy tale where while the moon is waxing, the powers of Wax are at play in the world.
Yeah,
while the moon is waning.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bingo.
Cyclical. I mean, it's all about the whole shtick is Harmony is all about the balance of them, right? So it makes sense to just have this cyclical nature of preservation and ruin, you know?
So when it's a full moon, they're in perfect balance. And when it's a new moon, neither of them have power. Now we're...
Yep.
Yeah.
We are.
And now you just hope that your birthday each year rolls around on like a preservation week, you know, not a ruin week and all those things, you know. That'd be pretty cool. I'd buy it. That would also, I feel like, set up, if you're talking about like making them into a moon, I feel like that'd also be cool to lead into like an Era 3, which probably would be a little more galactic, potentially futuristic sci-fi, you know.
We just predicted the entirety of Mistborn Era 3.
I think so. I think we've got it.
Okay. That reminds me, by the way, hold just while we're on bunny trails, while we're comparing Scadrial to Earth, Wayne in these chapters uses a crayon. Crayon is a brand. it's not like he didn't use chalk, he used a crayon. And I was like, okay, hold on. Hold up. That's a brand. Like he used Kraft mac and cheese is the equation there. So the crayons are on Scadrial?
Seems like the ghost bloods have been at work again.
there's your Easter egg that Earth does exist in the Cosmere, and we have proof. because yeah, there are crayons in distribution on schedule.
There you go.
I was trying to look up the word for that. Anachronism? Is I think is a word kind word? Of... It's not quite what? The correct word.
Well, the classic one is Kleenex, right? Like, go get me a Kleenex, but that's a brand instead of a tissue, right?
Yeah.
Anachronism is where a thing finds itself like in the wrong time period. Like an author use a metaphor comparing something to a time that to a thing that shouldn't exist yet, kind of thing. Anyway,
I see.
I did not catch the crayon thing, but there absolutely was in there.
Is this like I've seen a lot of memes? I don't actually know how legit this is, but I feel like I've seen so many memes that the Simpsons show like predicts the future, and like, like events that happened on the Simpsons that are like really played out in life in the future. I don't know if that qualifies, but that's what comes to my brain. Anywho,
yeah, really,
I don't remember shortly. The original question.
Let's talk about Max and Tyndall for a couple minutes here, because Max and Tyndall are Wax and Stairs' kids. I believe Max is 5 and Tyndall's like 1.5, 2, something like that. And there's some scene, I think it's the scene where Wax and Max are jumping around the city like before they get on the airship. And Max drops like a Wayne-ism. Like there's some phrase, maybe he swore, I don't remember what it was, but like Max swears in front of all the senators and they're all like, what? And Wax in the back of his brain's like, okay, I need to talk to Wayne about that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but what do you guys think of that whole dynamic? I thought it was great.
I specifically remember that scene. I don't remember the direct quote you're referring to. I wish I did. But it was really funny. And I think maybe at the same time they mentioned, like, you know, you can't expect, you know, Max to be, you know, a certain amount of mature, like an adult or whatever, to understand. But he was like, but he is more mature than Wayne. You know, I think there was a mention of that at some point. But it was really funny. It showed this like fun dynamic, I'm sure, of like, you know, Uncle Wayne coming around and
spoiling the kids.
Yes, exactly. Spoiling the kids, teaching them all sorts of rowdy stuff. I feel like this goes hand in hand with the prologue of we got to see kind of picture of Wayne as a child, like kind of the childish way he thinks and the details there. And how that, you know, he's passing on that like childish but free spirit, like kind of lighthearted manner to Max, to Wax's kids. And it's really funny.
Wayne is a perfect example of I believe the term is a Funkle. He's the fun uncle who comes around and ruins your kids. Because he's goofing off and teaching them all the stuff that you're intentionally trying to not expose your children to. And the Funkle comes in and just ruins it all. And everybody loves him.
All right. Real quick side story. I bought Elliot's twin boys this really obnoxious, like, toy dinosaur that roars obnoxiously every time you press it.
So loud. So loud.
And I thought to myself, I would hate to have this in my house. So I specifically bought it for Elliot and his boys so that they could bother Elliot and his wife with that said annoying toy. And that was my really big Funkle moment, as you said.
Yeah, very effective. That's a good one. By the way, very effective.
You're welcome.
But my favorite line of Mistborn Era 2 to date dropped in chapter 9 of this book. I had to share it on our Discord because I actually like started cracking up laughing and my wife thought I was crazy because Wax is on the airship with the new Mawish consortium people. And he's realizing this ambassador guy is not so happy with them. So he's trying to like diffuse the tension, the diplomatic tension there. And Max is there with him just going, I have to poop. And having to like navigate that situation. And the line is, and I think this is just, yeah, this is just in Wax's head, is tense diplomatic situations were not improved by the presence of a five-year-old, but it could have been worse. He could have brought Wayne instead. And I just thought, like, we were talking there about the childish antics of Wayne and the context now of that against Wax's own cheeky little kid. It was great. I laughed hard.
My favorite line in that actually is, Wax turns to the Malwish ambassador guy and says, is there a restroom available? And the ambassador says, he can wait, because he's not going to entertain it. And then Wax says, do you have children, ambassador? Because 5-year-olds do not wait. And that was
so true.
That really spoke to my where I am in my life right now. So I appreciated that line.
Another line that followed shortly after that I related well with is at the end of all of that, Max gets home and the highlight of his day is what? I pooped on an airship. Yeah. That I can go an entire day, like have this fun outing with all of my kids, and the highlight of their day will be the fact that they got to poop in the grocery store. Like that was the best part of their day.
Yeah. It is really neat that, you know, Trevor, you were referencing, you were saying, you know, looking forward to the opportunity that Brandon is going to have to get to write like parents into the Cosmere, have, you know, Wax and Saris, potentially have Raiden and Serini, all this stuff. And it is like such a great relatability thing to have like these moments with children. These just like, you know, you're in an important meeting and they do something, or just all these moments. It's such like a gold mine. I feel like as a writer to have that perspective and to get to share that, you know, with your audience, I think is fantastic. So I think that's awesome.
All right. Marcy and Wayne, their actual plot driving scenes in this section, they go down into the sewers of Ellendale, find a cell of the Set, and fight them. And we get two main things out of them. I'll ask about the second one first. They grab a Trillium spike out of like the lieutenant guy who's in control of the, or in charge. And that seems to pique their interest. And we're going to be moving into next episode, looking at that and seeing what that Trillium spike can do. But, what didn't they already have a Trillium spike before this? Why was this like such a big deal? I don't remember. Like, I was a little confused that this was such a big find.
I think we learn in a different chapter that the Chondra took the other one. They did have one, and it got confiscated by the Chondra. So the fact that they can keep this one and start to like check it out and study it was, I guess, new.
Okay. Okay. And then the second part, Wayne ties up all of the miscreants with their shoelaces and leaves Marcy to slow bubble them while he goes, gets help. We've seen that trick before. But right before Wayne gets back, there is a mysterious masked woman who steps in, peeks at the bubble, and walks away, or runs away. What's that about? Who's that? Any predictions?
The name that seems to immediately jump out that we seem to be maybe pointed towards us guessing this might be would be Telson. Maracy seems to realize that it's a woman, I think, pretty clearly. While the one very clearly miscreant woman that we know is out there and involved in these kinds of things is Telson. But I'm not so sure.
She makes eye contact with her, and I don't think she recognizes her, although she's wearing a mask, so I guess it still could be Telson, but
it's also through the bubble, right? So things are a bit kind of like distorted and weird.
Sure. Come on, give me a crazy theory for a soundbite. Throw a name out there.
Well, a woman in a mask.
And it's specifically not a Malwish mask. It's noted.
Oh, so it's what is it? Interlude from the Way of Kings, the herald that's going around smashing stuff. She's like very like,
oh, Ash.
Yes, spy breaking into people's houses and stuff. It could very well be her. You know, what other lady have we seen snooping around?
This places is
she shouldn't be at, you know?
And yep, this is the type of prediction I'm looking for.
Is that your...
Yep.
And you know, like...
Hat theory for you, yeah.
One chapter before this, Maracy takes down the cycle, and what does the cycle say? The ash comes again. Maybe we're just misunderstanding him because we're misled by the whole Mistborn
stuff. No.
He's just talking about, like, in five minutes, Ash is coming.
This is Serene Sion in human form, Ash, A-S-H-E. Do you remember, when you were reading Elantris and The Hero of Ages at the same time, and it was Ash... the little Sion and Ash fell from the sky. Anyway.
Yeah.
But also Shellash from.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So really, it could be any of those. You know, it's still, we'll have to read and find out, but I'm sure it'll be clearly revealed to be one of them, of course. But, you know, that's what I do. I'm here to take the silly predictable predictions, throw them out the window, and get to the real meat and potatoes. So,
here's my teaser, gentlemen. You're not going to believe me, but who this actually is even crazier than what you two just said.
Wow. Oh.
So it's Shallan as Light Song. That should be pretty cool.
Bingo. That's exactly what I was just going to say.
Yeah. That was honestly my first thought, but I'm like, okay, you know, Shallan has a lot of crossover with Warbreaker that we've already talked about.
So, got to reel her in a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to be too crazy, but, you know, you're right. You know, it's definitely not too crazy.
Just about lost my tea there. It was close.
All righty. Anything else from this episode?
Oh, yes, there definitely is. Hoid.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Where is he?
He's like...
Cab driver?
Cab driver? Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay.
And delivers a letter, maybe? Maybe I'm crossing things.
Envelope?
Yes, with an earring. I think he gives an envelope and Wax is just like, thanks, Hoid. And we're like, oh, hold on. Hold on a second.
Which now makes me wonder, have Hoid and Wax in the last 6 years like palled up? Did Hoid ever tell him that he was the one that threw the coin at him in in Bands of Mourning? Like,
well, did he ever come clean with that? I was wondering about this because Hoid, as we've seen him so far in this series, isn't he like a drunk homeless person? What isn't that what he was?
So in the first book, he is Wax's cab driver in the first book. And okay. he doesn't contribute anything. He's just the cab driver. And Wax knows him as Hoid. Like, he calls him Hoid. In the Bands of Mourning, he does not introduce himself as Hoid. And so Wax doesn't know that that's Hoid.
Okay, I see. Interesting. Because I was thinking, I was like, you know, it'd be certainly plausible for Hoid to appear in multiple ways and
Sure.
Obviously. We've seen, but... So is it also Hoid who's in the mask? Is that what you're saying?
No. I had nothing to do with the mask.
I just
My last name to throw out there. Wait. Also, just double checking. Are we confident that it's a woman? Like, was that specified? I don't actually remember. Okay, it was specified.
Maracy is under the implication it's a woman.
Okay. Then it could also as equally be Yasna, and all there. I feel like.
Whoa.
I feel like obviously that'd be a major book five spoiler for us, or maybe it happens between the end of book five and now, but I'm like, you know.
Words of Radiance spoilers. Yasna's alive.
Uh-oh.
That you'd have to also know that Yasna was dead, so you'd have to be at a very specific point in your story.
Oh, yeah, middle of Words of Radiance spoilers.
Spoilers for the beginning of Words of Radiance.
Right. Yes, okay, we do get Hoid as a sighting. He's now a cab driver, not a carriage driver. So Hoid has a driver's license, a Skadrian driver's license.
And correction, I did look it up. Hoid did not deliver the envelope with the earring in it that I thought that was separate. He literally just drives up in the car and Wax says, Hoid, take my wife home. I'm going flying with Max.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that now. And the Chandra is the one that delivers the envelope.
Yes.
Vendel.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all I got.
Side note, have either of you read Allomancer Jack?
I have not, no, but this is the first... This prologue was the first time that I've been like, okay, I kind of want to go read Allomancer Jack now, knowing that this is who was referenced in the prologue. I'm like, okay, that's neat. I'm wondering, is it just like a folk tale story, or was it a...
My question is, Paul, you've probably gotten this because you're audiobooking, right? So I'm assuming you don't skip them. The broadsheets have excerpts of Allomancer Jack stories, but if you start to read them, they're like ridiculous, over the top, like silly stories. Is the Allomancer Jack story that's in Arcanum Unbounded like just an entire book of that?
Nothing. It's absolutely nothing. Feel free to go read it. It is the fluffiest fluff of Skadrian lore you could ever read. But yes, he'll just, you know. It's all tall tales and myths.
That was the gist I was getting from how they mentioned Allomancer Jack here. Is like it's the bedtime story you read to your kids, you know.
Right.
You know. So pretty neat.
I believe the short story in. It's been a long time since I've read it, so maybe I should go reread it, but. The short story in Arcanum Unbounded is Allomancer Jack and the Pits of Eltania, which I don't believe are the Pits of Hathsin. I think it's like the caves that the army was trained in that were like... Do you guys remember that? Where the Kelsier like trains his army in a set of caves that are, you know, a short run from Luthadel. I believe... Like Allomancer Jack, you know, makes up some stories about him exploring those caves and finding a whole bunch of like, you know, mythical artifacts and stuff like that. I'd have to go reread it so feel free to fact check me after you go reread it, or after you go read it for the first time. But feel free to go read Allomancer Jack whenever you'd like. Anything else?
Nope.
Alrighty. Well, let's do a Stormlight review, gentlemen. As of the publication of this episode, we are 4 months from Stormlight 5. I think that's correct, because this will be the first week of August. Comes out first week of December. That's correct math. Okay. Stormlight review. Elliot, you're going to lead this. I'm going to give you a chapter name of a Stormlight chapter. You need to give me a brief summary of what happened in said chapter.
Bring it.
Your chapter name is Kinship with the Open Sky.
Kinship with the Open Sky. Like flying flight. This is one of those chapters in Rhythm of War where Kaladin and Leshwe spend some time being frenemies. They're enemies. They fight, like trying to kill each other, but then also realize they share this like honor code thing, and so they've got a kinship with like their shared love of flight and honor and stuff.
Incorrect. Paul?
Okay. I believe this is one of the chapters that they're learning about being squires to a Windrunner, to Kaladin. I think this is when they're, you know, they're the bridge four is starting to get their squire abilities behind Kaladin.
The title of that chapter is called First Into the Sky. So close, Paul. And Elliot, I was about to be shocked if you were going to get this correct, and you started great. You said Rhythm of War, where Kaladin, and if you'd gone a different direction after that, it would have been great.
Mm.
This is the chapter where Kaladin and Teft are locked in the tower in Rhythm of War. They're like in the closet where the door shut behind them and they can't get out. Yep. They've been there for like six chapters, haven't seen the light of day. All they see is like the glowy red orb of the sibling talking to them. Teft's like unconscious this whole time. And Kaladin's just like going insane in the middle of Urethiru, finally gets some breath of fresh air as he walks out and like sneaks out onto one of the balconies. That was a tough one. You're welcome. Elliot, I think you got pretty close. Paul, here's your quote ID. Who's talking? Aemia is barren. It's been thoroughly scouted, and hundreds of captains have tried finding mysterious fortunes on the island. All return empty-handed.
So I'm going to brainstorm, and this might help Elliot a good bit. But I just have to verbally process, I think. I'm thinking that this is a quote from the context of Dawn Shard, actually. And I think it's a character involved in that somehow. But I'm blanking on who this would be. My guess is that they might be speaking to Rissen. But I'm probably getting details mixed up, but I'm not certain. I once again can't remember the name, so I don't know if this gives me credit, but can I go with Rissen's Bobsk, or whatever the term is? Is that acceptable, or do I need to know the name?
If that were correct, I would give you credit.
Okay. Incorrect. It's incorrect. That's fine.
Elliot.
I had all the same logic just go through my head. Paul got to the exact same place you did. I also have a character in mind who I don't know their name, but I'm going to try and guess it because the name is definitely not going to come to me because it's a strange one. This is actually the sailor guy who goes with Rissen, who turns out to be a sleepless. And he's like trying to gently dissuade them from not going so I don't have to stop you kind of thing. But he has a strange, they all have like slightly strange names, right?
Yes. The sleepless have some funky names, I think. I remember, right. I thought about this too. This was like my second guess, potential guess.
You are incorrect. Here comes the response. The island, the large island has been scouted, yes. But what of the small islands surrounding it? What of the hidden one? Shrouded in mystery and storm. Paul, back to you.
Okay, so now I need to know who said the response.
Correct.
See, it's awkward because I think I might know who said the original quote now. I might. I very well could be wrong. There's a lot of characters.
Here, I'll tell you what. Give me a full answer for both quotes, and if you're half right and Elliot's 0% right, I'll give it to you.
Okay. I think that this is Sigzel talking to someone. I'm blanking on who he might be talking to. There's a couple of names floating around in my head. Can you read the second part of the quote again, like the response?
The large island has been scouted, yes. But what of the small islands around it? What of the hidden one, shrouded in mystery and storm?
I don't remember when this might be taking place. But I'm going to say that this is a conversation between... This is incorrect. I'm pretty confident of that now. Sigzel and... Okay, wait. Actually, I think I have a different answer. I think... once again, I don't remember the name. Anyway, actually, I do think I remember what they called him. But no, I don't. They call him in Rhythm of War, like the... What, he's like the mole or something? He looks at the maps.
The mink?
The mink, yes. The mink, I almost said.
The ferret? The naked mole rat? Exactly.
Oh my gosh. This is the mink talking to, I don't know, Sigzel or Dalinar or someone. I'm throwing out names.
Give me a final answer.
The mink and Yasna. Final answer.
Okay.
I'm lost, actually.
I'm not going to confirm or deny. Elliot, go ahead.
There's too many people to think about that could say this.
I actually like your attempt to go back to our like mainstream characters, because I feel like maybe that's where this is, and this is a little bit of a red herring down the Dawnshard path, but I cannot recall a time of our main characters talking about Aemia, like, at all. That hasn't come up in like the discussions or the main plot, I don't think, which has been like kind of odd throughout the whole thing, right? We've got this Risen like subplot thing where she's a Dawnshard at the end of all this, and we're still left at the end of Rhythm of War going, hang on a second, when is that going to be really, really important? And so based on that, it has to be Dawnshard. So I'm going to go with a fairly simple answer and hope to kind of just get this, sneak this through without really actually knowing the answer. I think the person giving this response is Risen.
Give me a full two-part answer.
Okay, fine. This is Risen giving the response you just read, and she's responding to the ship captain that they're on that I have no idea what his name would be.
Incorrect. This is originally Risen talking to Navani. So Paul, if you had thrown out Navani instead of Yasna as like your just chuck it answer, you actually would have been correct. But this is Navani at the beginning of Dawnshard, you guys were correct, chartering the Wander Sail 2. To go to Aemia, and Risen's like, there's nothing there, I promise. And then Navani's like, no, there's an oath gate there. You got to go get it. So, Navani and Risen.
Okay.
Got it.
Man, that one did throw me for a loop. I was trying to think of what character might have some knowledge or care about the geography or might know that there's some like shrouded island out there.
Yeah.
That's really what I was wrestling with. That's why I thought Sigzel. That's why that came to mind. Like, World Singer, he probably knows. But who the heck is he talking to? I couldn't figure it out.
All right, Elliot. Your review. Tell me what they rated it out of 5 and what the book is. Underwhelming. Weak setup and low payoff. Which is very surprising, considering plot is Sanderson's greatest strength. The beginning was enjoyable, but once they set off on the journey, it felt like one big side mission, which accidentally resulted in them stumbling upon something grand. When the story progresses solely on coincidence, it's just not that satisfying to read. On a more positive note, The development of the relationship between Redacted and Redacted was wonderful. I like that the author chose to focus more of it in this book.
Tough one. Tough one. I feel like there's plenty of clues in there, but they seem to conflict in my brain. Huh. Okay, so on a journey, that actually doesn't happen a ton in Sanderson books, that it's actually not common that we have like a specific quest that the team is on. It's usually more convoluted than that. I think, yeah, we've said before you got to throw logic out the window, right, on some of these cranky reviews. Sometimes. The Oathbringer, I'm feeling Oathbringer, just because there is kind of a bit of a side quest in that one where they end up going, well, no, it could be. I'm going to stick with Oathbringer. I think the side quest is the whole mission to Kolinar and all of that that they don't like. The problem is, like, the payoff is epic in that book. How could you be disappointed in that? I'm not sure who the characters are that he's referring to. That the, again, all the clues just don't seem to actually match to point towards one specific book. But all that said, I'm going to say Oathbringer 2 out of 5.
Paul?
Okay, I have a very strong logical inclination towards a book. But like we've said, taking these reviews too logically often leads to trouble. I can't shake the feeling that the descriptors that they're using to describe the book is talking about Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. That's what I can't stop thinking about. So is that, I don't actually remember, are we counting secret projects? Is that on the table? Because that is
anything that you have read.
Okay. I'm just going to go ahead and send it then. I think this is Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. I think this is a 3 out of 5.
Okay. This is a 3 out of 5 for The Bands of Mourning.
Ah.
Okay. Is it funny that literally I haven't considered any Era 2 books in my like thought process for this at all? It's too fresh, you know. Anyways, that's funny.
I briefly, momentarily considered Mistborn Era 2 because I thought like they are a little more questy than some of the others.
And
we have talked about that where we do actually get like a discrete go here and achieve this kind of plot line. But I talked myself out of it in my brain before I even started talking.
My logic for Yumi was I feel like that book had a really strong hook to try and figure out what's going on. And then they're kind of like stumbling upon things to figure out what's going on. And it's, you know, throws you for a loop. And it's very much like has a more of an emphasis on their relationship, which they talked about. So, you know, that was the only thing I couldn't get out of my head.
I'd have to reread Yumi, but I feel like I seem to remember like 85% of that book I thought was great. And then it kind of fumbled the bag at the end. That's kind of how I remember that book.
Yeah.
But I'd have to reread it. All right, Paul, you're up 1-0. The trivia goes to you. What rank is Kaladin in Dalinar's army at the end of Rhythm of War?
This is testing my memory of Rhythm of War for sure. At the end of Rhythm of War.
Just depending on where you are. Of War. I'm not asking his Knight Radiant ideal level. I'm asking his rank in Dalinar's army structure.
So the thing I don't remember is where he is at the end. The thing I'm going to go with, which probably is changed by the end, but it's the only notable thing I remember from the book, is that he is not actually in Dalinar's army. He's been discharged. And really, aside from that, I'm sure he's been reinstated at some point. I can't remember the rank at all. So I'm going to go with that this was the trick question, that he is not technically an active member of Dalinar's army. He's been discharged.
All right. If Elliot gives me the actual answer, I'll give the point to him. If not, you get the tiebreaker. Elliot, what is his rank?
Well, I'm not going to help resolve your dilemma here, because that was exactly my answer that I thought was there's that scene where, like, almost against Kaladin's wishes, Dalinar's like, no, you're too tied up in this. You need a break. You're fired.
Yes, but he doesn't fire him from the army. He relieves him of active duty. There's a difference.
I thought he was completely fired. I thought it was like, okay, you're going to become a surgeon or something now. Like, go figure it out, you know?
In fact, he gives Sigsil his current position and promotes him to this.
Colonel.
High Marshal.
Rear Admiral.
Yeah, I was thinking, the only thing I can think of was general, and I'm like, I know he's not a general. Like,
he basically is. He promotes him to High Marshal, which is actually the rank that Amaram held when Amaram was in the armies and stuff. But he is High Marshal Kaladin for the majority of Rhythm of War. And the only reason I remember that is because Navani always calls him that over Spanreed in the tower. Like, she refers to him as High Marshal, like, a lot in Rhythm of War. All right, all that to say, Paul, you've got the point. It is 11-8 now. You are within a 3-point margin of Elliot. Thanks for joining me. We'll reconvene next week.
See ya.
Absolutely.